All I Want for Christmas Is You. Who is it on drums?
Me.
Bro, how is that not real drums, man? You are the king of programming drums.
It's programmed drums.
Everything that you hear on that track is
it's
you.
It's just me. Two people on the
Wow.
song.
And then you also did My Heart Will Go On your finger drums over here?
I did. My Heart Will Go
On. Oh my God.
It's always the finger drums. Yeah.
Go.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show. My guest today is a dear friend of mine, and he's also one of the greatest songwriters and producers of all time. He is the writer and producer of All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey, the greatest Christmas song of all time. Just two writers and two producers on that track, him and Mariah. He also wrote and produced a bunch of other Mariah hits, including Hero and One Sweet Day with Boyz II Men, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. Just to show you the magnitude of him, he also produced My Heart Will Go On for Celine Dion, Titanic. He won the Grammy for Record of the Year that year. And then the next year, he won the Producer of the Year Grammy, which he had already been nominated for three times before that. So he's an incredible guy, very, very humble guy. We're going to go deep into all these stories of him working with some of the greatest singers in the world, including Barbara Streisand, Gladys Knight, Luther Vandross, so many others. So anyways, this is my talk. I hope you enjoy the conversation with the incredible Walter Afanasyev. Ladies and gentlemen, Walter Afanasyev. No, I just did the same thing.
I have this really, really dear friend, Robin Thicke, the singer. When he was young, he used to never remember how to say my name. So he would always say, because it's the same amount of syllables, he would say, Walter Awful Nauseous.
Awful Nauseous.
Awful Nauseous.
All right, well, let's dive into this interview because you got to go because you're a busy man. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Several years ago, I was at a friend's house, and then this hero came along. He gave me strength to carry on. I told him, all I want for Christmas is this interview. And now you're here. There's nothing I fear. My pod will go on. Ladies and gentlemen, Walter
Afanasyev.
Perfect.
So amazing.
All right, dude. Congrats on yet another Grammy nomination.
Oh, cool.
And your Emmy nomination.
Oh, cool.
And your Songwriters Hall of Fame nomination.
Oh, cool.
You're the man in noms. You've been sitting in nom territory for 25, 30 years now.
There's another one, though. We just got nominated for Hollywood Music, some
Music and Media Awards.
Something.
Yeah. Take it, dude.
And everyone is saying Golden Globes are coming up.
Oh, Golden Globes.
But we didn't get it for the, because we weren't eligible for the Oscar. However, if this song that we're all getting nominated for was in a theater film, it probably would have.
Let's talk about the Mariah years. You had many, many years working with Mariah. Mm-hmm. From what it seems like, a lot of it seems like at the core was you and Mariah.
Yeah.
So like, how did that all start happening?
So Mariah was a new singer who was signed to Columbia by the president of Columbia, the chairman, Tommy Mottola. Mm-hmm. And this is about, I'm going to say around 89, 90. Mm-hmm. And I was working for a producer, Narda Michael Walden.
The great.
The great Narda Michael Walden.
Oh, yeah. And that was, so really, to interrupt you, that was kind of your break, was actually Narda discovering you, right?
Yeah. We were all San Francisco based, you know, living in San Francisco, young musicians. And I had a bunch of friends who were drummers who all, when he moved to San Francisco, started, you know, getting lessons.
Wow.
Because he started teaching. And everybody was raving, yeah, I'm studying with Narda Michael Walden. I'm like, oh my God. And then one of my friends who was studying with him said, he's putting a band together and you should audition. And I said, okay. So they kind of got all the info and everything. And I went down to audition, and unfortunately I didn't get the gig. This other guy, a friend of mine, Frank Martin, got the gig. He was incredible keyboard player. But as it turned out, I had a band with a guitar player at the time, Joaquin Lievano, And we were all like Jean-Luc Ponty, musician the road with him. This is kind of a fusion band we started putting together, and we started playing around the Bay Area, and we became pretty popular. It was called The Warriors, this band called The Warriors. And Narda was across the street. We were rehearsing at a place called SIR in San Francisco, and right across the street was a great studio called the Automat Studios. And that was David Rubinson's studio, and Narda was in there, and we were all coming out at the same time, and he remembered me when I auditioned for him. He actually gave me a nickname. He gives people nicknames that he's fond of. And so he was, you know, really nice to me, and he started calling me Baby Love. I don't know why. Because I was really young. I had long hair and, you know, whatever. So I came out, and he came out, and he looked, and he goes, Baby Love. And he remembered me. So we kind of like rekindled, and he goes, what are you doing? I go, well, I'm playing with my band, and we're playing tonight or tomorrow night, whatever it was. And he came down, and he saw the show, and he was really blown away. He goes, can I play drums for you guys? I went, you're playing drums? Narda Michael Walden is going to play drums. Anyway, he became our drummer, and we started killing it around the Bay Area, and just playing all the big houses and all the big places. And then as we kind of came through the learning and the writing and the making of Warriors music, he noticed that I had a good amount of talent for writing, and because I wrote pretty much all the music.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, you should come down to the studio and hang out and write and play. And so he kind of made me his keyboard player, arranger, and we started working on all his records that he was producing. And it just grew into this, I became like the co-producer, the songwriting partner. And eventually it was, you know, I would do as much as, you know, anybody can do on his records. And then one day this girl comes in, Mariah Carey. Nobody knew who she was. She was brand new, young girl. I think she was like 18, 19 or something.
And how old were you?
I was like, this was, so if it's 89, I was 58, 68, 78, 88. 31. I was like 30, 31 years old. Yeah. But I wasn't at the studio because I was working on her tracks at another studio because we didn't have enough rooms at Narda Studio. So he was doing vocals with her, and I was at another place called the Plant Studios in Sausalito. Tommy was there, and he said, hey man, who's doing all this work and stuff on these songs? And the people at the studio said, well, that's Narda's guy, Walter. He's his keyboard guy and arranger and stuff. He goes, wow, he's doing all this. And so he called me up, and he goes, are you seriously the one who's doing all these tracks? And I said, yeah.
Wow.
And he goes, I'll tell you what, I got one more song, but I want you to do it. And he gave me this song to do, and he goes, you have one day. I did the song, and literally the next day with the song, I flew to New York because they were already done with Narda's stuff. And we did the vocals, and they put the song in the album, and it was her second number one song. The first one being Vision of Love. That was her big breakout song, which we all played on, but this one was Love Takes Time, which I produced, and it went number one. And then all of a sudden I became this number one, you know, guy. Like, and then Tommy goes, hey, you want to work for me? And I said, sure. So I quit Narda, and I signed a contract with Sony Music. They became Sony Music. It was, used to be CBS.
Yep.
And I was an exclusive producer, and Tommy goes, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to just do, like, Mariah and you go off and write for the next album. So Mariah and I just started writing, and we wrote a bunch of songs, and we hit off so perfectly. We were just really, really chemically, you know, easy to write with each other.
Yeah,
it was
for
just
sure.
magical. And we started writing the second, her second album. And, you know, a bunch of really, really cool things happened, and we felt really good about it. And then all of a sudden it just grew into this really strong kind of partnership. She wasn't exclusive to me, but you know, we were most of the albums were, you know, the big songs were always me and Mariah, and then she would have some other producers, writers for some of the other stuff, more of the up-tempo stuff. And then, you know, like we did, I think, six albums or whatever. We did a whole lot. Along the way, we did this Christmas album, which was 93, I think. We started writing the three songs.
Like a few years later. Because you had already done like Dream Lover had come out and all that stuff.
Yeah, we did Dream Lover. We did Hero.
Oh my God.
I think we were like, you know, there, all of the, like there was really, really big songs after the Christmas album though. Yeah. We did a song called My All that was huge around the world. We did another song with Boyz II Men that was like the all biggest, longest number one.
One Sweet Day.
One Sweet Day.
Which is one of my favorite songs of all time. Yeah. It's one of the biggest choruses.
Yeah, it's really.
Ever.
It's an emotional song. It's very powerful.
I'd love to kind of tap in on all of those, but if we could. So like Dream Lover, that's the second album, and Hero. So you're obviously at that point, you guys are just simpatico. It's working really well together. But Tommy Mottola heard your stuff from Narda and was like, wait, who is that? Oh, that's the guy in the other room.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Give you a chance. You do the song. It goes number one. He's like, okay, I'm going to sign you. I want you to just be with Mariah.
It was not only Mariah. I mean, it was just very handpicked Sony people that Tommy was very kind of, you know, this is his guy. Like I was his guy. And
of course, like Mariah's his woman. So it's got to be, he's like really protective and probably wants that to be the best that he can get.
And it was very fortunate because, you know, Mariah did all her first album writing. The reason she got a deal and everything is on the songs that she wrote with this other fellow, Ben Margulies. And for whatever the circumstances of how she stopped working with Ben and then went and started working with me. So I became her writing partner and then her producer. And then ultimately we started co-producing everything. But he was sort of like, you know, you can't work with everybody, but you can work with those people I tell you can work with.
So exactly. The boss.
The boss.
He's being Tommy Mottola. So all of a sudden, Tommy or Mariah, or who wants to make a Christmas album? Like, why do you go to make a Christmas album with Mariah Carey?
Well, so back in the 90s, Christmas albums back then were, it wasn't like, you know, you're going to do a Christmas album in the beginning of your career. You do it after, you know.
Towards the end.
Yeah, you just kind of like, that's the retirement.
It wasn't what it is today when you're just like, let's make a Christmas hit to try to break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was kind of a weird thing because here she is. I think we've done one or two, three albums. I don't know. 93 was like maybe after her third album.
Yeah.
And she, Mariah, like loves Christmas. She's a very, very, you know, seasons and, you know, like any young lady, she loves the holidays and she loves Christmas. And
yeah.
Tommy kind of suggested a Christmas album, and we were like, really? Just out of nowhere, you want us to do a Christmas album? He goes, yeah, let's do it. And he loved, and she loved, some of that old style rock and roll that, you know, Phil Spector and, you know, all that kind of, and gospel kind of was running through Mariah's life, and she's such an incredible singer. And so we started thinking about these Christmas songs, and she put together with Tommy and everybody a list of these covers that we're going to do, you know, Joy to the World, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and all these other
the classics,
and then a few of these more kind of fun rock and roll kind of things. So the flavor of the album was very particular. It was like, you know, Phil Spector meets old rock and roll meets gospel kind of art. And I go, is there any room for originals? And Tommy goes, yeah, you guys should write some songs. So we set out to write, and I go, well, you know, there's kind of the three varieties of Christmas songs. One is, you know, the old kind of religious, you know, Hark the Herald, you know, like, so I said, why don't we write one like that and kind of come out with some really cool classical stuff. And so we wrote this song called Jesus Born on This Day. And then I go, let's write a song that's more like our style, you know, kind of a hero meets pop, Mariah pop kind of a song. And so we wrote the song called Miss You Most at Christmas. And then for fun, I go, let's do an up-tempo. You know, she had this, you know, kind of a thing. We started banging out this piano, kind of a boogie-woogie thing, rock and roll thing. We were at their house in New York, upstate New York. And it came out with this cool idea that she started singing All I Want for Christmas Is You. And it you know, you just, back in that moment, you don't ever realize, you know, there's no foreseeing the future. There's no like, oh my God, this is, you know, it's not like when Paul McCartney wrote, you know, Yesterday, until, you know, he goes, oh my God, this is going to be one of the biggest songs on earth of all time.
Yeah.
We didn't think anything.
Yeah.
Nobody had a clue how it would become, you know, what it became. But
and is it like you and Mariah sitting at a piano and you're like, and you're just like boogie woogie together?
I'm like going, and then she kind of picked up on it. She's like, I don't want to, so, and we just started playing around with the rock and roll of 1-4-5, you know, the 2-5 and whatever the stereotypical chords she was, you know, taking my chords, my suggestion of chords, and kind of singing her melodies too. And, you know, and then we kind of got a little tricky with, you know, the bridge and, you know, so there was like some very interesting original moments in there, but we were trying to land on a, you know, a familiar vibe, a familiar kind of a landscape for this up-tempo, fun little Christmas song.
Yeah.
And, you know, after we wrote these three songs, she goes, yeah, let's, you know, let's start recording. And so I went home because I lived in San Francisco Bay Area and I had a studio in Marin County. I was living there. And I started working on what I thought was the demos.
Yeah.
So I would always do a demo, which I knew on this particular album, the Christmas album, we were going to go into a studio in New York with live musicians. And the live musicians, kind of in the back of my head that we were going to do. So I did this demo and I did the fake drums and, you know, with the little saxophone sample.
Yeah.
My piano was done on a computer. You know, it's really hard to play that.
Super fast. Yeah.
And I'm not that good, but so I did it on a computer and it was all kind of quantized and, you know, sequenced. And then I did the bass, and I did the drums, and I did the keyboards, the synths, the strings, the tubular bells, the timpanis, everything. I did the whole schmear, and I didn't really know what to do in the intro.
Yeah.
So I said, well, maybe I'll come up with this slow,
dramatic,
you know, this whole thing that starts the song. And so I sent it to her, and she goes, yeah, it's really good. So she started doing her vocals, and we got the vocals done. Still knowing we're going to go into a studio with live musicians. So we got to the Hit Factory with all these incredible players. I remember Omar Hakim was on drums.
Wow.
And, Dan Huff was on guitar. Who was bass player? Like some incredible, like Weather Report bass player.
Right.
I can't even remember his name. So we were all there and we started kind of Greg Fillinganes was there on keyboards.
It's everybody.
You know, like really, really great musicians.
Yeah.
And so we started to, you know, learn the songs and kind of get into the vibe. And I'll never forget, Tommy Mottola walked in and he's listening to us and he's like going, it sounds country. Like, like you guys are, you know. And he was kind of making a joke, but it wasn't as good. He just goes, it's not as good as that demo of yours. And then, so the decision was made not to do the live musician version, but to release sequencer version as the single. So it came out, didn't.
Wait, hold on. So you are
every instrument,
everything that you hear on that track is you.
It's just me.
You program the drums. The keys, the bass, everything.
It's just two people on the song.
And wow.
Yeah, it was like, I actually sometimes, when I hear the song every Christmas, and it's, you know, it's it's one of those things where you either get sick of it, it's so much of it playing around, or in my case, and everybody's like, you know, kind of giving me that punch in the shoulder. Oh, dude, man, there it is again, you know, whatever. And I'm like going,
everywhere
yeah.
you go.
So I remember I have the song at home in on my computer, and I was showing some, they go like, can we hear it? I go, you know what I'm going to do one year is just do kind of like a show and tell,
yeah.
you know, like this is the song and this is what I did and this is all the parts that I played. And
all
then
the
Mariah's vocals here, and then the background, she and, you know, her singer did here, and that's it. That's the entire song.
Wow.
Yeah. So unfortunately, every year somebody will ask at some point for me to play it on the piano somewhere.
At some event.
And I'll go, okay.
And you're like, shit.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's like,
keeps your chops up.
Anyway.
Wait, so hold on. So, okay. So you end up, so you make the demo version that ends up being the version.
The version.
You play every single instrument on it. It's all you.
Correct.
Then you go to the studio with legends, Omar Hakim, Greg Phillinganes and everything. Tommy Mottola says, this isn't the right vibe. Let's go with the demo.
Yeah.
Did Mariah already cut the vocal, or then did you go cut the vocal with Mariah to
I
the
think
demo?
Some of it, if memory serves me, some of it was already done to the demo just for her to know the timing of her, you know, the intro, the slower parts and stuff like that. As far as the actual finishing of all the vocals, I'm not quite sure until we tried the live guys. And but you know, the live guys are on the album. I mean, they're playing on other songs.
On the other songs, just not on
All
I Want for Christmas.
Yeah. So, and but you know, I mean, who knew, right?
Wow. Like, what about the background vocals? Because Mariah did the background vocals.
Mariah does her background vocals. She's
what about the lower male sounding vocal?
That's her singer Melanie Daniels.
Okay. Wow.
And Melanie has a very
beautiful
range.
Yes.
Mariah comes up with the parts. Sometimes we come up with the parts, but mostly Mariah comes up with these gorgeous background parts and, you know, kind of answers. And, you know, she's such a master of that stuff. And so she'll, you know, sing this, try this, and she'll sing. That's all her in there with her singer.
Well, yeah. It's
you know,
her and the singer later.
You know, all these little, you know, answers and whatever. All I want for Christmas. And that minor chord right there, Christmas. I thought, yeah, that's pretty cool, right? And she goes, yeah, I love that chord. Anyway, there's a long, you know, there's a long now expectation that comes out every year. It's not anything that we're like I never bet on it, but it every year it looks like it's going to be another All I Want for Christmas Is You goes number one year.
And is there even an engine behind it, or is it just like
no,
it just goes and every radio station's like, here it is, Thanksgiving, boom, All I Want for Christmas Is You.
But the thing that happens is she, Mariah, has become the Christmas
queen. Yeah,
and
so she does the Hollywood Bowl. She sings it.
It's literally like right after, you know, Halloween.
Yeah.
And it gets earlier every day. It's probably going to be like 4th of July.
I know they. I saw they already did it.
Earlier and earlier. Yeah,
like mid-November they're doing it. I was like, oh wow.
And it's up to her. Like she's the queen. She's the gatekeeper. She's comes out. It's like not yet. And then all of a sudden, okay,
it's Christmas.
It's Christmas. And then it starts. It's almost like the entire industry is waiting for that. You know,
for Mariah Carey to welcome
Carey.
Christmas.
Yeah.
The season has now begun.
So that means that if she's the kind of like, you know, when the race starts, whatever that flag, flag, and
so she waves the flag.
She waves
Get going.
The flag. Let's go. And because of that, we're all kind of knowing, well, her song is going to be
everywhere again.
So, you know,
that's wild.
Yeah,
bro, you did such a good job on the drums, man. There's so many good fills in that song for you to be like.
Yeah, well, you know, I do drums. I had a guy, I think it was like a sound guy at my wife Katie was doing her stand-up, I think it was at the Improv a couple of months ago, and there was a sound guy there, and Katie goes, you know, the sound guy knows you're here, and he wants to ask a question. And I go, okay. He goes, who played drums on My Heart Will Go On? And I went, I did. He goes, you played drums? I go, no, I programmed the drums with my fingers. He goes, dude, those drums sound incredible. Those are like the best real, like, and I go, well, that's kind of what I do, is I have all my samples and my kits and my favorite go-to toms and crashes and cymbal swells and, you know, and that's, I love it. And then you take...
You're literally like one of the most recorded drummers ever.
Yeah, probably. And then,
playing the drums. It's amazing.
And then you always have to match the drums with the right bass.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times. And so I've kind of made it into that whole, like, the partnership of the bass drums, and I do it. And that's why I'm so, it's not like I'm against, I mean, you're such an amazing drummer. I love drummers. I'm a drummer. I play drums. I have drums at my studio. I grew up on drums. It's my favorite instrument in the world. But for some reason, it's one, like, you know, for all the years that I've worked with Vinnie Caliuta, and I've worked with all of the greatest drummers. I mean, Steve Smith back in the old, because Steve Smith was literally a neighbor when I lived in Marin County. We were all like up there and all these incredible musicians. So drummers are my favorite. I just love drums. You know, like I'm trying to figure out a way, how do I, like, my favorite drums in the world are Craviato drums. And just want to get a set of Craviato drums. I have DW Collector Series drums right now, but.
You need the Craviatos.
I need the Craviatos.
Yeah, for sure. Those are incredible. You know? Get me a pair too while you're there. I'll take a set. Well, dude, yeah, hats off to you for programming the most epic drums ever on two of the biggest songs of all time, as well as a bunch of your other songs. So, like, Christmas season comes around now. You're hearing this song all the time for 30 years now. It's 30 years.
Yeah.
This is the 30th year.
30th year, yeah.
Because when the song, right?
No.
It was a couple years or something?
Yeah. When it came out as a single, it didn't go, I don't know how far it went, but it didn't go number one. And then a few years, I think it went
to 38. I was Googling.
It was like a few years later, it just started going again. People started playing it again. And I don't know, at one point it became again, but then it just did it. You know, it's just like one of those things that happened. It's kind of weird.
It's so crazy.
But then when you hear it now, you go, well, it kind of makes sense, man. Because when you hear the song, it's fun. It's such a cool vibe. And, you know, and I get to say things and I feel a little bit weird saying them because it's a song I co-wrote. And I've, you know, I don't mean to pat myself on the back or you know, it's so cool. But, I'll never forget, like, my friend David Foster, who did so much in the Christmas category.
Oh, yeah.
With so many legends, and he's...
Legend himself,
You know, like the Michael Bublé and, you know, Josh Groban and all the incredibly ginormous Christmas project and the songs that he wrote. And I went to his studio one day, and he was working on the Michael Bublé Christmas album. And I go... Hey, let's write something. I mean, standing here with you, he goes, no, man, we're not going to write anything. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, no, nobody writes. There's not going to be any more original Christmas songs. Your Christmas song, All I Want for Christmas with Mariah, was the last one that got into that Christmas canon, and the vault is shut. And I go, are you kidding? You mean no other Christmas song will ever become a famous Christmas? He goes, I don't think so. And I've sort of been challenging the world, everybody who, please write Christmas songs.
Yeah.
Go in there and write one and try to get it to replace All I Want. I mean, I secretly wish it won't, but you know.
It's not going to be replaced, you know, Walter.
But anyway.
You're like, I don't want to hear the song every year for the rest of my life. Dude.
Some places, I think, they have signs that you can only play it once an hour or once. Like, some places are banning it.
Maximum listening.
You can't play it. It's like playing Stairway to Heaven at a guitar center.
That's so funny, man. Well, that's so cool. That's like legendary. I mean, you're a part of like history. Yeah. That's like, I mean, you're the huge part. It's just you and Mariah. It's wild, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's wild. And like, yeah, are you, because now, I mean, I hear that song every day when the season is there, when we're in season as we are now. five times a day, whatever. Do you feel anything anymore when you hear it? When you're in the grocery store, car, at the club, and it's on wherever?
I feel wonderful. I feel extremely proud. I feel, you know, like remarkable. To be very honest with you, it's a song that, you know, everybody always talks about it in a financial level, you know, and I don't like to talk about it in that way, but you know, it's a life-changing.
Yeah.
My children, my grandchildren, for the rest of time, all of my, you know, family will always have that, you know, as a, I don't know. It's like,
it's like security. It's like,
you know, and
it's wild,
you know, and so, yeah, I feel very proud. And so when I'm, you know, at a supermarket or when I hear it, you know, I'll,
When you're at the supermarket and you hear it, you think like, oh, groceries just got paid for. We're good.
I should get all this shit for free.
I deserve all of Christmas.
Anyway. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's such a blessing. And
man.
Can
we talk about One Sweet Day?
Yeah.
Because I love that song so much. Like when I was, you know, young and that song came out, I listened to it all the time, which is funny because I was like a punk rock metal kid that loved Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
I had the soft side also, right? I was always listening to it. And that chorus is like one of the biggest choruses ever. So you co-wrote and produced that song.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of questions, but the main question I want to ask first is, how do you go about vocal producing a song like that when you have all four guys in Boyz II Men and you have Mariah Carey?
Yeah.
How do you write and determine who gets what verse and all that kind of stuff?
Well, so you start off with obviously the song and how it goes. This is the verse, this is the chorus. Then you start listening to the style of Boyz II Men, and obviously I know Mariah's style and her pattern of how she develops within a song from her first intro and her verse and what she does in growing as a singer inside of a song. I know Mariah very well. Having never worked with Boyz II Men, though, I started to realize, well, what you know, there's a method to their style and how they record. So I started listening to them, and it's pretty much the same thing. So when we were actually in the studio, I confirmed that usually, you know, one of them starts, second one of them goes in, and then Wanye usually does the big bridge because he's the, you know, the acrobatic singer. And then Mike usually with the low bass and the talking that the style of their records, and he would always say something really sweet and, oh, girl, you know, yeah.
When I look at you.
Yeah, so we putting all the stuff together, so there wasn't none of that, but because it's a very melancholy song, it's not a love song or fun song, it's about going to heaven, you know, it's dying.
Yeah.
So it's a very powerful song, but so when we were there, we had a little bit of time to experiment. So I tried harmonies. I'm very good at arranging choirs and background vocals. I've been doing it for a very long time. So knowing who sings on their records, who does for, and by the way, the same thing applies to all boy bands.
Right.
You know, Backstreet Boys had a style of who sings first and second and third. And so did, you know, a lot of the, you know, NSYNC, they had a style. I've done records with New Kids on the Block, and that was my first boy band experience, was producing New Kids on the Block. So I had to learn quickly who does what first and how does it go according to what you've done already and according to maybe we should break some rules and do it a different way. So we just kind of experimented a little bit. There's versions of the song that I have in my vault that are so cool. Like when you hear the actual song One Sweet Day, when the bridge comes, it goes to one voice. And live versions where there's so much background singing in the bridge.
Wow.
It's really cool.
Because the bridge is so emotional. That's Wanye into Mariah. Yeah. And the transition from Wanye into Mariah, that is one of the greatest vocal duet dynamic handoffs.
But because of all the singing you just heard and all the big giant chorus of the chorus, to just single it down to one voice, Wanye, that was like chills. And we when I muted all the backgrounds, everybody goes, yes.
That's it.
Oh, so... And, you know, so the song kind of did what it did in the studio. We mixed it and I mean, it was just another one of those things. Like, who knew it would be such a huge song? It went to number one and stayed at number one for more weeks than any other song in the world.
Yeah, it held the record for years or something.
Yeah, for a lot of years. Yeah.
15, 20 years or something it held the record. Yeah. Longest number one. But hold on. We can't blow through just say, yes, we did it in the studio. What is it like vocal producing, hearing these voices come out of the microphone? How do you coach them? How are you making that work? And are you just like freaking out hearing these the best singers ever all bouncing off each other?
Well, I mean, I had, like I said, I had experience arranging and doing background vocals and choirs and stuff like that. And just hearing their kind of their way of singing together as a group. So I didn't want to change any of that because that's their way of singing. So they would come up with some of these parts and I'd be like, great. Now, Mariah, why don't you try up here or sing that part?
Right.
I'm one of those guys where I love to double, triple, quadruple as many voices as we can. So there was a lot of that trying, you know, kind of like switch up to a different part.
Yeah.
You know, instead of singing the root, maybe sing the third. And so we just tried a few different things here and there. And it just became kind of this beautiful, just wall of these incredible voices. I mean, these guys are some of the best singers in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I've stayed friends with them. You know, like Sean is, you know, magnificently talented. He's such a great guy. And he does his shows at our club. And so knowing his tone and his vibrato and his way of falling off a note or doing a little run, knowing Wanye, you know, just knowing all of their you know, kind of, I don't know, it was kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because they did all the work. They became Boyz II Men. They already did all of it. They have the sound and it's just me going, oh, okay, just do what you do best. And, you know, I did a song once. It never came out. It was with Boyz II Men and Backstreet Boys.
Oh, whoa.
It was an incredible song. And we had like 8 hours to do all the vocals. So I flew to Orlando, Backstreet Boys, Boyz II Men. And we got out of there and it's just insane the amount of it never got released.
Why didn't it get released?
I don't know. It was the record company.
There's a Backstreet Boyz II Men song out there that never came out. That's the collab ready to happen.
People always tell me, why don't you just put it on the internet?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be an instant. I mean, it's huge.
It's the a ballad or is it pop?
It's a ballad. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
Backstreet's back. Dude, Backstreet Boyz II Men is wild.
Yeah. It's.
Wow.
It's a really cool song,
Walter.
But anyway, I think somebody didn't like the way, you know, it's always like a jealousy thing. Somebody in that band didn't like the way they sounded next to, you know, like.
Or they weren't used enough in this song.
They didn't sing enough licks because they had more, I don't know, it was one of those things where it was an arm wrestle and they decided not to put it out. So,
oh my God.
It's crazy, crazy reasons.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So. Okay, wait, back to One Sweet Day. Yeah. Back to that bridge. So Wanye comes out, it transitions into Mariah. Her entrance into that bridge is like one of my favorite vocal moments ever. Do you remember how that came about?
Well, I mean, when you hear the chords change into that real kind of different sounding section, which became the bridge, the chords represent a place that Mariah could go, you know, melodically. And what happens is that she'll sing sometimes these places, these things come out of her because of the chords that I was playing. makes her go to a place, to a note, to a phrase, a different way. So now I'll never forget, like, some of the lyrics were not, not really finished. And I think some of the Boyz II Men, added a few really cool lyrics, you know, to see you in heaven, little bits and pieces here and there that we did it at the last minute in the studio. So, but it was like, you know, just trial and error. She just has this gift of melodically just coming up with such crazy cool things.
Yeah. Wow.
She's an extraordinary singer.
Yeah.
Like there's a song, I think it's called Love Will Lead the Way, or it was from a movie that we did called Glitter, I think.
Uh-huh.
She does a vocal that's considered by many as one of the best vocals of all time.
So what is she like tracking her vocals?
I mean, she's very, very, she's a perfectionist.
Yeah.
She, even though she's such a crazy good singer, she's constantly trying to better it and make it better and make it better. Not because it's bad, but she just wants to make it better.
Yeah.
So she's a perfectionist. She's a workaholic. And, you know, I mean, for whatever time that I had with her, I mean, it was the greatest, you know, musical experience with somebody that I've ever had, man. It's like, you know,
you two together.
We wrote some incredible songs, man.
Yeah.
You know, even anytime you need a friend, man, I loved that song.
And to talk about Hero, so you wrote and produced Hero with Mariah.
Yeah.
Is it true she didn't want it for her? You guys wrote it for something else or something?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a three-part explanation to it. Like, she, Tommy, and me, and how the song came about. My recollection is that it came about that Columbia Pictures, the film part of Sony, was doing a film. They were putting out a movie called Hero. And the head of the film company called me and said, can you write the end title? And we want Gloria Estefan to sing it, because she was a Sony artist.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. So I met with Gloria. I'll never forget. I actually flew to LA from San Francisco, because she was flying back to Miami from LA. So I flew just to have a meeting with her at the airport.
At the airport.
Yeah. So we were in
this is pre-Zoom calls, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, pre anything. So I flew down there. We met, and I think I knew them anyway, Gloria and Emilio.
Yeah. Great people.
Yeah. And we talked about it, and I go, well, listen, you know, I'll come up with something. And, you know, so I had in my head that I was going to write a song for the film Hero. So then I went to New York to work with Mariah, and I think we were at Right Track Studios, and they had a really, really beautiful C7 Yamaha. And we always kind of wrote on that piano, and I kind of was in the studio, and I said, hey, by the way, there's this, you want to write a song? And I said, there's this movie coming out called Hero. And she goes, oh, okay. So we started toying around, and I just start playing. And she's like, that's nice, whatever. And then we just started playing, developing, writing this beautiful song. And she started singing, there's a hero, you know, because she knew the title of the movie is Hero. Yeah. And
she started riffing on Hero lyrics, you wrote that piano melody.
Yeah,
she's singing
it
to the melody.
Yeah. And then so we kind of like, with Mariah, it was always the same thing. It was like playing ping pong, like I'll hit her the ball and then she hits it back to me. And so I'll play something and she sings something, and then it inspires me to play something, and then she sings something else. And so that's always been the case with us writing. And as far as I remember, we had a really great, cool, you know, a song. It became obvious that we're writing a really nice song.
Yeah.
And so we were there, and Tommy came to the studio, and I think we're in the middle of playing it, and he heard us doing it. He's going, what is that? And we said, well, this, it's not, she's like, it's not for me. He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, we're just writing a song for somebody else. Who? And like, so we, it's a song for this movie. And he's like, oh, let me hear it. So we played it and he goes, you know what? No, Mariah, that this song is for you. And she goes, no, I don't want to do this. It's not me. It's not what I do. It's not my style.
Yeah.
She thought it was too pop.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm telling you right now, trust me. He goes, this will be one of your biggest records of your career if you do this. She goes, well, I don't want to. And she kind of was very skeptical, yeah. You know, but we did it. And it was a little bit, it was a little uncomfortable for her because, you know, we were trying to do the best for the song.
Yeah.
But we're also trying to do the best for her.
Yeah.
And so inside of that best for the song, best for her, didn't really always, you know, agree with each other.
For sure.
So there was a little bit more of a, it wasn't a struggle or anything. It wasn't an arm wrestle or anything, but she ended up doing her vocal and it then came out and it just became this big song. It's like, yeah, it's one of those, again, who knew? I think she's very proud.
Tommy Mottola knew that.
Yeah, Tommy Mottola knew. But I think ultimately she's very proud of that song. It's one of her biggest classic Mariah Carey of all time songs. And you can't really
deny
it.
Can't imagine it not being her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'll never forget, like we were, I think Madison Square Garden, we were doing a concert and it was for, trying to remember, I think it was an HBO special, Mariah Carey in concert, filmed at Madison Square Garden. And I'll never forget, there was this moment in our time we were filming, there was something happened on the New York subway. It was a tragedy. It was like some people got killed or whatever. And it was a very trying, horrible thing. And during one of the evenings that we were filming, Mariah said, I'd like to do a song right now dedicated to the victims of this tragic subway thing. And she was going to donate proceeds to the victims' families and stuff like that. And it was this really cool moment.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, we were really high up on stage. And I looked down and there was, you know, like at a big concert, you had the partitions and you had the security guards so people can't get up to the stage.
Yeah.
And there was a man standing like literally right down there and he had like a raincoat on, a suit and tie, and a briefcase. So he was obviously coming home from work or something. But we started playing Hero and she started singing it and he was looking up like touching his like heart.
Yeah.
Like he was Pledge of Allegiance kind of thing. And the lights hit him and he had tears falling down his face. And it was one of those moments where I go, oh my God, this is a really important song.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I mean, they play, you know, at all kinds of, you know, events. And
yeah, dude, it's like Hero by Mariah Carey and you. It's a big song.
Yeah.
Yeah, wake up, Walter. Pay attention, man. People love your shit, okay? Oh. It's time for you to embrace it. One more question about One Sweet Day that I forgot to ask you. Is that Ricky Lawson on drums?
No.
Oh, who is it on drums?
Me.
That's you on One Sweet Day too? Bro, how is that not real drums, man? You are the king of programming drums.
It's programmed drums.
Oh my God. It sounds like a drummer. It like,
yeah, it's
the,
got
the
a
thoughts,
higher,
the fills, the everything about
it's
it.
It's a little higher pitch snare. I remember, you know, like, well, that sounds kind of cool.
So,
boom, boom, push, that's how I go.
Yeah, dude, give us some One Sweet Day drums.
So I'll always have my kick. This is my hi-hat.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And then I'll go.
And I know you're shining down on me from heaven like so many friends. Wow, dude.
It's always,
that's
it's
you.
Always the finger drums. Yeah.
Wait, do All I Want for Christmas Is You on finger drums. That's a hard one.
Well, it's just.
The shuffle. You're doing the shuffle.
But the piano is the one going, and not the hi-hat. The hi-hat's just going.
Still doing a shuffle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, still doing a shuffle. And then you also did My Heart Will Go On your finger drums over here.
I did. My Heart Will Go On. I have my portfolio of finger drum songs.
Do My Heart Will Go On real quick on finger drums. The end of the chorus, dude.
How does it go?
Here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was that one, the key change. That was a big drum fill.
Huge drum fill.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, you know, but here's the thing. So me doing all these drums on computers and samples gave me a little bit of a, not a problem, but it gave me a lack of controllability in the studio with live drummers.
Mm.
And I started going, you know what? It's not fair for me to take away the creative process of a drummer. Like Vinny Caliuta for me is like you.
One of the greatest
ever. One of the greatest ever.
You cannot put me on the Vinny Caliuta.
No, but I mean,
there's
really just, you know.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many incredible drummers that you go, okay, why am I going to hire him if I'm just going to tell him what to play?
Right.
You know, like,
let me just say, as a drummer, bro, the fact that you've programmed these drums, like, I don't think I can do better than that. So why should I be a part of it, right? You are murdering it on these programmed drums. That's crazy.
But there's songs, like, if you listen, like, where I did have a specific need for the genius of Vinny Caliuta playing what Vinny Caliuta can do. Yeah. Only he can do.
For sure.
Yeah. So I've gone into these other places where it'll be a very, very long fade out outro of a song that I'll never forget. There's this one song we did with this artist, Draco Robbie Rosa. He's a Latin artist, but primarily his claim to fame, he was in the group Menudo when he was young.
Yep.
And then he wrote all the Ricky Martin hits. He and I wrote She Bangs for Ricky Martin, but he also wrote La Vida Loca and whatever. And he's an incredibly talented singer, artist, performer. But he and I wrote this song called, I think it was called Mad Love, but it's just like incredible. It's wall to wall orchestra. It's kind of like the coolest thing I've ever done, but it needed this giant within this fade out, this giant drum solo.
Yeah.
On over and over and over again, just this loop. And I go, Vinny, you got to go, just go crazy. And he did. And it was like,
of course he did. It's like Vinny,
you know, so. Stuff like that I could never do, but
yeah, but you don't need to do that.
But anyway, that's the whole thing. That's my drumming 101.
Okay, so My Heart Will Go On. Let's go. What is that? Year 2000, right?
Yeah.
So you produced My Heart Will Go On, Celine Dion.
Yeah.
That year you win the Grammy for Producer of the Year.
Yeah, I won Producer of the Year, but then that song won
Record of the Year. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
So what's the story of My Heart Will Go On? You had already been working with Celine Dion, right?
I'm with Celine Dion, and she, you know, she works with a few producers, and it was during a moment in, like, it's another one of those moments in time where you just never expect it or you never pre-think it or whatever, but suddenly there's this song that her label, I think it was Paul Anthony who was the head of her label or somebody, Epic Records, said that there's this song for a film that they wanted me to arrange and produce for Celine. And it was already written by James Horner and Will Jennings, and it was called My Heart Will Go On. And I go, okay, great. So I got this demo, and it was James on the I think it was a Rhodes. It wasn't even a piano. And it was Celine's voice singing this demo. And I just took it and I blew it out. I mean, I did what I do best. I just arranged it and produced it and played whatever I played and hired Bill Ross, the incredible arranger orchestrator, Bill Ross, and hired these incredible musicians. And and what you hear on the record is this, you know, 80-piece orchestra with this incredible guitar, with some background singers I did, Celine, and it's this whole thing. The thing about it is, I never met James Horner.
That's so ridiculous.
And I never once talked to him, never met him or anything like that, but I get this phone call after the record was mixed. Humberto Gatica mixed it, and we, you know, turned it in, and everybody listened to it. I never really liked the song, like, to be very honest with you, because I thought it was so boring. Like, it was like literally watching an iceberg melt. Okay, I get it. Everybody's drowning and freezing and whatever. So, you know, I mean, if you think about it, it's very, very slow.
It is so slow.
Every night in my... I'm just like, okay. Anyway,
like, can we get to the chorus already?
Yeah. So anyway, we turned the song in, and then I get this phone call, and it's like, by the way, we have to put James Horner as co-producer. And I went, why? I never talked to him, not a word. Don't know the guy. Like, how is the co-producer of this when I've never met him? He never said nothing. Well, because he feels like, because he wrote the song and you're using his chords. And I go, yeah, but everyone who writes a song doesn't mean they're producer.
They're the producer.
It's like crazy, you know? So we got into this little arm wrestle with the label, but they had to do it. Then, well, we have to do it. That was part of the agreement and whatever. So I'll never forget, we're at the Grammy Awards, up for Record of the Year. And you know how they put a category or nominees together in the audience?
Yeah.
So we're all sitting together, Celine, me, James Horner, and Will Jennings. And I'll never forget, I walk in and I'm looking for my seat. And they always had these name tags, name signs. And there's my seat. But James and Will already are sitting there, and I had to go through them, you know, like in the aisle, like in front of them. So they had to stand up, and, you know, we're all in our tuxes and everything. Yeah. And I'm like facing them as I'm walking by, and I go, hi. And James looks at me. I mean, he looks at me and he goes, And I go, I'm Walter Afanasyev. And he goes, hello. That was the one word he ever said to me.
Oh my God.
Not anything else, not zero. And then next thing I know, I'm walking on stage with him to get the Grammy.
To get the Grammy for Record of the Year.
Because you co-produced it.
You like go, and then, but then also in that show, you won Producer of the Year.
Not the same show. That was a different year. One was 99, one was 2000.
Oh,
yeah.
2000. Yeah, okay, so, okay. So when you won Producer of the Year, you could be like, that's what a producer does, bro.
That's what we do.
Not every songwriter is a producer, ladies and gentlemen. You produced the whole song. You did the whole thing. You put all the whatever. You put every instrument on it. You did your finger drums.
Yeah, but he wrote it.
Yeah.
And
okay. can we talk about what about tracking Celine Dion's vocal on that song?
Yeah. So we tracked. We used. Humberto had some of her vocal that he recorded the demo on, and then we upgraded it. We finished the vocal and. Yeah. You know, so there's this like feeling amongst that because he had recorded the demo with her of some of the vocal, he was entitled to getting.
Right.
And there was this, another kick to the scrotum was he actually did a second version on his own that was put on the album, the soundtrack album of Titanic.
Yeah.
But Celine's version was the one that was the radio single that won the Grammy that was on her album that I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now there's two versions and everybody's listening to the two versions and going, how come they sound so different? Yeah, but these guys took all of what I did and tried to redo it again on their version. It was just this big mess, which I never understood. I go, I mean, you're lucky enough to have this giant song you wrote. You co-produced it already with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now you got to do another one. It's like, you know, throwing sand in my face of somebody he's never met before. So
wow, it's super wild. It's okay.
Anyway, it's okay.
You've done pretty good, Walter.
I don't. Yeah.
And, yeah. It's fine. You wrote a bunch of other smash hits. So then you with Celine you did Beauty and the Beast.
That was the first one I did with Celine.
That was the first song?
First song I ever did with Celine.
And she wasn't really known yet at that time, or what?
Unknown. Total unknown.
What?
And it was my friend Jay Landers, who was at the time A&R for Columbia Records and Sony Music. It was early 90s. I think it was 90, 89, 90 something. He called me and he goes, there's a song that Alan Menken wrote in this animated movie called Beauty and the Beast. And I go, yeah. And he goes, well, there's this talk about doing a pop version. Like, nobody's ever done this on a Disney movie before, where they take some song that's in the movie. And in this particular case, it was that scene where Angela Lansbury sings to her little teacup son, you know, tale as old as time. And it was this one thing that they wanted to try to get a pop duet version. So we arranged, I think Robbie Buchanan helped, and there was no artist attached yet. And then Jay Landers goes, well, there's this guy named Peebo Bryson. You mean that R&B singer? That it's like, okay. And he goes, and there's this young new singer from Canada called Celine Dion. It's like, nobody's ever heard of her.
Right, right.
So it was one of those experiments kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think Disney was just saying, yeah, let's see how it works. And if it doesn't work, no big deal. We didn't use a real orchestra or anything. It was just, again, all me on my little computer stuff. So anyway, we got in there and we recorded their vocals, and it was such a sweet thing. And Celine was so beautiful and so awesome and great and lovely sounding. And we were all, oh yeah, it sounds really good. And then Disney put it out and it was remarkable. However, Beauty and the Beast did more. I think it gave her a little bit of, you know, a little help with her career, because, you know, it was a big Disney movie and she was an unknown Canadian singer. And then as Disney had it, they had another film called Aladdin in the works, and then they wanted the same thing done. They wanted, you know, a duet at the end of Aladdin. It's a pop duet. So we did it again. This time, Peebo Bryson again. Like, he was like the only singer that could do these things. And at this particular stage, Celine wasn't going to do it. So we found this other pretty unknown singer, Regina Bell, and we did A Whole New World. Whole New World actually went number one.
A Whole New World, that song is incredible.
Yeah, it was a big song.
Yeah, you crushed it.
Well, Beauty and the Beast was also a big song, but I kind of felt really, really weird that, you know, Beauty and the, I mean, the words.
Yeah.
It's like, really? I mean, A Whole New World. I mean, that's
much better.
Much better.
Yeah. Much more inspiring. Yeah. Man. Okay. So
All finger drums,
ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be the name of this pod. How to finger drum your way to number ones. All right, dude. So, producer of the year. So, at the Grammys 2000, you win producer of the year. You had already been nominated three times for producer of the year before that, and then you finally won it on the fourth time. How did that feel? That must be crazy.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So, and this is a lot of people have. We learned this along the way.
Yeah.
But you know, like when you drive down Sunset Boulevard during an awards season, and let's say the Oscars are coming up, you see 50 billboards that says "For Your Consideration."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That marketing is what does everybody who doesn't do any marketing, and somebody who does a bunch of marketing, promotion, and advertising. Well, it does work. So.
Yeah.
All of the other times I've ever been nominated, I didn't do anything. It's just you stay at home until the you know, nominations come out, and then you stay at home until, you know, the award show. But you don't do anything. On this particular round, David Foster again said, you know, dude, you have to get a publicist, kind of, you know, get some publicity and get a publicist. So I did. I hired a publicist for this one time, and sure enough, I won. And I go, well, that's what a publicist does.
A publicist does. It drives awareness.
I even like went upstage when they're taking photos. You know, she's right there. I go, this is her.
Who was it?
I can't remember her name. I don't remember her name.
So now you're nominated for this year again. You got another Grammy nom. But it's not like this isn't producer of the year. This isn't like your award, even though you wrote it and produced it.
No, it's a songwriter's award.
Right.
So we're.
But are you going to get a publicist? Are you in charge of that?
No, but here's the good thing about it is like I'm nominated alongside Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, people know him. So, and, okay, so it's for a best song written for visual media.
Yes.
Right? It's going to be amazing. With Barbra Streisand, your longtime collaborator. Yes. But yeah, so Hans Zimmer wrote it. You wrote it.
Yeah.
It's wild. You did it with the London Symphony Orchestra.
Correct.
That's amazing. It's from The Tattooist of Auschwitz.
Yep.
Man, it's an incredibly powerful song.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing.
And you produced it with Peter Asher?
Yes.
So wow, Peter, dude. What a line. Okay, so right there, you got you, Barbra Streisand, Peter Asher, and Hans Zimmer. It's a good lineup for a Grammy Award.
I feel because it's from the film and the film company, Synchronicity Films, and Hans's, you know, role in this with his company and Bleeding Fingers and all of the things that are a part of the song, I feel very, very privileged and very, very much, you know, grateful for the fact that, you know, there's already so much going on publicity wise, you know, that I don't really have to do anything, and we'll see what happens. When we were all nominated for the same thing for the Emmy Awards,
yeah,
that's different. Even though there was this like huge amount of, you know, publicity and, you know, for your consideration and marketing and all that stuff, another song won because they just went balls to the wall, like complete. It was the same guys from La La Land. It was the same writers from this, and it was that, and it was, you know, Mark Shaiman and these other guys, and it was like this crazy amount of.
You got to go ham.
You know, so we couldn't compete with that, so we, you know, didn't win.
Can we go back to your early days?
Yeah,
I want to talk a little bit about a little more about working with Narda Michael Wallen.
Yeah,
and I have a question. Because of course Narda did like so many of the big Whitney records, right?
Yeah,
and you were working on some of those, right?
All of them, yeah.
Did you work on I Want to Dance with Somebody?
Yeah.
Is that you on keys?
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, that's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was fun. We did How Will I Know? I Want to Dance with Somebody, All the Man That I Need. There's a bunch of them.
Man, you were just flying through those records. What was it like playing key? Like those are such iconic,
yeah, those
key parts too, man.
Well, the thing about that Narda's style of producing, which I learned so much from, and he's such a great teacher, and for the years that I spent with him.
Oh yeah.
Like he loved his crew. He would have, you know, his guitar player Corrado Rustici. He would have Randy Jackson, his bass player. He, Narda, either would be on drums because he's one of the best drummers in the world.
Yeah.
Or during that time, it was like the birth of the drum machine. So the Linn drum machine was out first, and then the Oberheim drum machines and all that stuff. So he started getting more into the finger drums, which for dance music and for the club thing that he was trying to get for those Whitney songs.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It wasn't really, you know, a real drummer thing, but it was more of a drum machine. And it was always be like me on the keys. Sometimes he would call his other keyboard guy, David Sanctius. Oof, what an amazing keyboard player. And he would have this band, and we were all set up in his studios, Tarpon Studios. And, you know, we would just try different things, and he would call out, okay, you know, Baby Love, instead of that chord, try another one. And Randy, instead of the bass guitar, why don't you try on the synth bass? So Randy had this little synth bass, this little Moog bass. Boom. So he did a song, I think before Whitney, with Aretha called Freeway of Love, we did. And it was this the coolest bass. Boom, 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 boom. You know, it's this Randy Jackson bass sound that came out. And it was like, you got to do that.
Yeah,
on every song from that one. So that's what Randy did. He's like, I want to dance with somebody. How will I know? That was always him on the bass. And
wow.
And so we were always like a group trying different things, you know, different I don't know, different bass lines, different guitar parts, different key. You know, let's add a bell thing. Let's add these horns. This Oberheim, I had this Oberheim Matrix 12. And, you know, all these little things, you know.
With I Want to Dance with Somebody, were you guys playing live or are you?
Yeah, pretty much. Everybody was always playing, you know, live.
Yeah.
And then we would add overdubs afterwards. But if the main take, the main, you know, the rhythm track, the main, you know, the.
Yeah.
That was always live.
That
was
must
always
be
dance.
Like a party in the studio for that, for a song like that.
Yeah, it was really wild. I mean, once you do it, everybody has to go and fix their parts. Like, you know, and Nardo was always like, yeah, I like that. Okay, Corrado, you got to, you know, so he would add a few little things and overdub things. Baby Love, your turn, you know, and I would come in and add, you know, some bells or whatever. And then he would fix the drums up and that's how we did it. And then he would go into the vocal stage and then sometimes he would put some strings on it or background vocals. But anyway, that's how Narda worked. And it was always, you know, the coolest things and you learned so much from it. And then especially with vocal production. I mean, he's a master at comping and doing vocals.
Yeah.
And I always sat next to him while he did vocals and I learned a lot. And that's why when it was my turn to produce vocals with the greatest singers in the world, I had this body of learned experience with Narda. And
what's a lesson that you learned from Narda?
It's just how to, the greatest thing I learned from Narda is how to be with an artist, how to get the best of their, you know, because it's a very, very temperamental. It's very, very, you know, you're on such a high expectation, and singers who are a little bit more sensitive or a little more insecure about their performance, you got to know how to read, you know, certain things that might start going south or sour, and to get them back into a good place, because it's hard. You know, I mean, if you're a musician, you learned how to play an instrument very well. You're a supreme musician. Chances are you're going to be playing consistently well.
Yeah.
When you're a vocalist and you're, you know, you have a little cold or you're in a bad mood or, you know, on the way to the studio, you found out that you're, you know, grandma's sick or whatever. I mean, anything could go wrong with a human voice.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the best singers in the world, like when I produced, you know, like Luther Vandross or somebody like that, those guys are just on like one take, you know.
Wow.
Other singers have, you got to give them a bunch of takes.
Yeah.
And so I learned all these things just with Narda and just how to then go about in my own way with my own singer. You have to be a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a coach, a teacher, you know, a friend, whatever. So, and just to get the best out of them.
That's so cool, man. And so, okay, so you've worked with a lot of the greatest singers ever. Great transition into that, right? Like, you've worked with, obviously, Celine Dion, Mariah Carey, Boyz II Men, Luther Vandross. I mean, the list goes on. And Barbara Streisand, Beyonce, Gladys Knight. Like, you have worked with the greatest vocalists in the world.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
Who were some of the most special standout vocal performers in the studio to you?
You know, I mean, Celine blows my mind at times. When I did a song with Celine that was very powerful in my experience as a producer with a singer of the caliber that Celine Dion is. And literally, she's one of the greatest singers that ever lived. And she's one of the best artists, people, persons, whatever. I adore her. And she's, we were doing a song. It was a Prince song. Prince wrote called With This Tear. It's a really sad song. And it was a song similar to One Sweet Day about somebody dying. It doesn't really say that, but you know, listening to the lyrics, like with this tear, you know, that you're thinking about them because they're no longer here. So, we were up in Canada and we were recording this. We're about to record her vocal, and everybody has fun. When Celine and her crew and we're all in the studio. We're having fun. We're playing ping pong in the other room. We're just laughing. And she's genuinely one of the most, the highest level of a sense of humor, like nobody else. She's like really funny and she's really hilarious. And so we're having a great time. And okay, it's time to sing. Well, you know, it's hard to just break into that sad character when you were just laughing your ass off. And so we started taking, you know, recording her vocal, and it wasn't what it was supposed to be. So I kind of said, Celine, you know, you got to be more sad. And so anyway, I try to figure out, how do I make this incredible singer sing in such a different place that she's singing in right now? And so I mentioned the fact that, you know, like, who's the most important person in your life? And she said, my mother. And Celine at that time had 13 brothers and sisters. We're all in Canada. Her mom and dad are over there. She's literally leaving their house to come to the studio. So she's full of that family, that whole energy. I said, okay, you really got to think about her dying. And she kind of went, what the f-? She looked at me and she instantly turned into this, don't you dare say that. I don't want to hear it. Like, she went crazy. Like, she got mad at me. Like, why are you saying this? Why are you making me think about that? And I go, I'm so sorry, but this is what the song calls for. And she just went nuts, man. She just went really, really dark. And I go, roll the tape. And she sang what you hear on the record, literally in one take.
Wow.
It's like she was thinking about that. So it was a lesson learned, but a two-part lesson. Like, you really shouldn't hit them like that. You know, it's like a big shovel on the side of the head, because you really, really got mad at me.
Wow.
But I got this beautiful. Right, and then Prince, I remember Prince calling me. He goes, dude, man, that vocal was like crazy good. So,
that's cool.
But there was moments where, in my opinion, the human voice, as you know, many performances, when you hear Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto or third piano concerto, that pianist who's performing that take has had years of practice.
Yeah.
That piece of music they're playing has been practiced until their fingers are bleeding, right? Yeah. So now they're on stage with the orchestra and they're performing it. A singer who comes into a studio has never sung that song per se the way they're about to sing. So anything can go wrong, like I said earlier. There's mental, physical, whatever. So for me, the greatest achievement is if you can sing something in one take. And very few singers are like that.
Yeah.
I know, like, for instance, Barbara Streisand for sure can sing a song in one take.
Wow.
She has done that.
Yeah. It
blows. It's mind-blowing. Luther Vandross did. There's a song I did with him on one his album called Songs, called The Impossible Dream.
Yeah.
With the London Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah, the song's incredible.
And that's literally one take.
That performance is wild. Yeah.
Gladys Knight has done a one take to me. That was, yeah, pretty incredible. But I remember one time Yolanda Adams sang one take and everyone in the studio was crying. It was so insane. So for that, to me, that, or to just the power of a human voice and what you can do with it. And there's the other side of it, is where you do a bunch of takes and you take the best of the takes and you comp it and you tune it and you kind of, like, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not really a performance. That's just, you know, edited and carefully put together, you know.
Yeah. So who are those people? Who's the slowest?
I think that just because of the technology that is now ours to have, everyone, we take everyone's voice and we kind of, if there's a phrase that somebody's saying, but it's just a little bit of a sharp or flat on one of the notes, we'll tune it. It doesn't mean that you suck as a singer. It means that technology's helping, because when you listen to the radio right now, there's not one song you will hear in the last 10 years that's not auto-tuned or melodyned. Everyone is tuned. Yeah, I
know. Even the best singers.
The best singers. So,
speaking of the best singers, all right, so Barbara Streisand, you have worked with consistently since the late 90s.
Yeah.
Now here you are this year with a Grammy nomination with Barbara again.
Yeah.
What is the key to having longevity in a creative relationship like that?
I think just being trusting, you know, just she knows that I'm going to deliver. And mind you, it's not just her and me. She's got her team.
Yeah, of course.
One of the main components of Barbara's team is Jay Landers, who's been her executive producer and literally her like right hand in choosing songs, choosing, you know, producers, if you will, choosing whatever and he's been sort of my not just friend, but he trusts in me. He knows that I'm going to deliver what needs to be delivered. And so he has consistently always said, yeah, we got to do this with Walter. So, and I've done an album for Barbara. I did an album with Babyface. Kenny and I co-produced it together. And it was a different take on it because it just clicked on a different light on the whole thing. And it was such a joy. And it brought little things and just a sprinkled of different colors and flavors and everything that I normally never would have done. And he brought that to the table. As in on this particular project we're doing now, I'm doing it with Peter Asher, I've never worked with Peter. I've known Peter, but Peter's like a legend. He's such a legendary, massively respected and accomplished producer in his own right. I mean, he started off, you know, as an artist. But it's been such a joy with him because he brings a little of that same thing. He'll, you know, turn on lights on it and go, how about we try this? Normally, I never would have gone over there with those guys. He goes, let's try those guys. And then he never would have gone over here with this, but I said, let's go over here with this. And so the combination of him and me doing it together, it's brought such a cooler, more, I don't know.
What a legend, Peter Asher, man. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is he the guy, he brought in Waddy and Russ Kunkel and Leland Sklar and everybody.
He made me go into, you know, more of a little more of an uncomfortable place that I normally would have, because I just would have stayed home and done everything on my computers. And he goes, no, let's do it with those guys. And boy, I'm so glad, because, you know, we've been doing songs that are, you know, it's not just a click track and a sequencer. So
I love it, dude. All right, final question. Another song that I love that you did, Endless Love with Luther Vandross and Mariah Carey. Man, tell me about that. And one question is, did they track the vocals together at the same time? And if not, who went first?
Well, it's one of the most kind of like examples, but also very joyful in me telling of how it worked out. So anyway, the song Endless Love was originally done with Lionel Richie and Diana Ross. And as big of a hit as that was, now we have to go follow in those footsteps.
That's a gnarly duet, to follow.
So now we're going to go into these two voices, Mariah and Luther. Oh my God. As it turns out, no, they were not in the same studio because of scheduling and bi-coastal, like Mariah's East Coast, Luther was West Coast. So because of all that and all the terrific opportunities that never happened, but they sang their individual parts, and kind of what always happens, and I told you about this with the Boyz II Men Backstreet Boys song, and there's all kinds of examples, but singers are very, very proud of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're very, very insecure about what they're doing. So in particular, sometimes somebody will sing something that's, oh man, I would have done something more like this now. So that was a little bit of what happened, is Mariah sang, and then Luther sang, and then Mariah heard what he sang. So she had to fix a couple of things. And then he heard what she now did differently. So it kind of went back and forth a couple of times, but it ended up so perfectly in the way they harmonize together, the way it sounds like they're holding hands,
looking
at each other, singing Endless Love. It really does.
That's crazy. They were done at two different locations.
Absolutely.
I was thinking it must start with Mariah, because to do that harmony on Luther's side would be really yeah. hard without
yeah
without her. But that's, you know, incredible.
But we had, you know, we had the original record to be to reference, and
yeah. yeah.
And it's one of those other things where, you know, you what can I do a little bit more different or a little bit better, not better, but a little just different than the yes. original. And I think we did it. You know, it was a couple of different chords that I put in, and it was a real orchestra. Of course, I played drums with my fingers.
Of course,
I played bass and drums, you know, finger drums.
Dude, I have more respect for you than I ever did before. I'm so glad I learned about these magical fingers.
Yes.
Oh my God. Because I heard rumors about the fingers from All I Want for Christmas Is You, and then I didn't realize that it was also My Heart Will Go On and everything else.
Yeah,
not everything, pretty much, but yeah. a lot of the biggest hits. Well, dude, thank you for coming and spending the time with me today.
Christopher.
You know what? Here's the thing. I have a Russian father, okay, Vladimir? And we share this together, and I'm going to call you Vladimir, and you should call me Christopher from now on.
Of course.
Because we got to remember who we are.
Of course.
But thank you. And, you know, happy Christmas season. I hope you stay rich forever and that it's number one forever.
I hope so, too. Maybe I could live next door to you one of these years.
Come on, Walt. Come through with Katie. Much love to Katie. Make a ton of noise for Walt. Woo! We love you, bro.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Go with Elmo. 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 This is the stuff, man.